We are back with another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. And bear with me today, not much of a voice, so we'll see how far we can really take this show because we got a ton to get into. That's really the main reason we have a show today is that we've got a lot of college football to talk about. We got to talk some NFL, maybe talk a little college basketball. So a full show to you today. Just bear with me, though, because not much voice to work with. Might squeak a couple times, might sound a bit raspy. I got two water bottles right here, so hopefully that gets me through this hour-long show, and definitely get a lead on Marco a little bit for today's show. But shocker, shocker, surprise, surprise, what we're going to open up talking about is the streak finally coming to an end. Yesterday, the Denver Broncos beat the Kansas City Chiefs for the first time since 2015. Almost made it to a decade without a loss to the Broncos. And let's be quite honest, that game was never close. And what I mean by that is not so much the margin in that game. It just never felt close. Even when the Chiefs were down by 5 points, it felt like 20. Because of how putrid that offense was, how putrid the play calling was, that was an all-around embarrassment yesterday. And here's the reality. At the end of the day, the sun rose this morning, and the Chiefs are 6-2. They are tied for the number one seed in the AFC. You can lose to bad teams. And I want to say we discussed it a little bit last week, that in the NFL, anybody can lose to anybody. We saw the New England Patriots beat the Buffalo Bills 2 weeks ago. You know, we saw the New York Giants nearly take down the Buffalo Bills on Sunday Night Football. It happens. That's the sport. If it was like college all the time where the top teams beat the bad teams, the NFL would probably not be as enjoyable. Excuse me. Had a sneeze there, not even dealing with my voice there. But, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, a bad team, if they catch you napping, if they catch you flat, they're going to be able to beat you. That's just the NFL. No, they could stall a little bit. You know, Denver didn't play poorly either, or didn't play, you know, that great either. I thought they didn't play poorly, but they played, I would say, just slightly above average. I mean, it just goes to show you how awful Kansas City was yesterday. Now, that was my takeaway. The Chiefs were just a different type of bad. Now, we found out the morning of, Sunday morning, that Patrick Mahomes was dealing with the flu. That I believe his fever had broke on Saturday night. Just wasn't feeling great. Believe there was an upset stomach. But I'm not going to use that as an excuse. I'm not going to say the Chiefs lost because Patrick Mahomes wasn't 100%. Because even at 50%, the Chiefs should be able to beat the Denver Broncos. And there was just a multitude, a variety of awful decisions in this game that led to the 24-9 defeat. I mean, it doesn't matter how you chalk it up, it doesn't matter how you slice it. This was just an all-around awful performance. And it might have been the worst loss, maybe not circumstance, but just worst pure loss in the Patrick Mahomes era. I've heard people bring up the Colts game last year. I've heard people bring up the Tennessee game, you know, right before Halloween, I think it was, in 2021. When they lost 28-3. I think it's who you were playing, though. You know, Tennessee was a good football team back then. And they just pushed around and smacked around Kansas City for all four quarters. The Colts game, I think, is pretty comparable. That was not a good Colts team, not a good quarterback. And I didn't think at that point in time a defense that was good enough to hold Kansas City to what they held them to. I mean, let's remember it, because this Miami Dolphins team that you'll see here coming up in 6 days, an 8:30 a.m. kickoff this Sunday in Germany. That Dolphins team put up 70 on this Denver defense. The Chiefs got 9. Now, what's the glaring issue of this team? I think when you're 6-2, you don't need to say the sky is falling. You don't need to be calling for people's jobs. You don't need to be asking for players to get benched. You don't need any of that. But what you can do is look yourself in the mirror and identify your major flaws, because I think one consistent flaw that we've seen from game 1 to game 8 is that this wide receiver core is awful. It's awful. You can talk about upside all you want. You can talk about potential all you want. This is a terrible wide receiver group. I mean, when Rashee Rice is your number one wide receiver, a guy that wasn't even in the building back in March or April, that's problematic. And you know what? I feel like I've taken this approach before, not just with the Chiefs wide receiver room, but, you know, blaming guys that just aren't very good at what they do. Do you blame, you know, a wide receiver who you shouldn't expect a lot from? Should you be upset and throw all of your anger at that player in that moment? Or do you take a step back and go, well, is he the one that put himself out there? I think some blame falls on Brett Veach's shoulders. I mean, look at the offseason that Brett Veach had. And talk about the glaring holes of this team, right? Looking yourself in the mirror. What do we know about the wide receiver core? They're not good. Okay, you went into the offseason expecting Kadarius Toney to be a number one. He's not. He's at best a number five wide receiver and a gadget player. You drafted Sky Moore where you did and expected Sky Moore to be a number two. I know that was two offseasons ago and not this last offseason, but you went into this offseason expecting a big jump in play. You know, and I am somebody that I think I said on the show before that MVS earned his contract in that AFC Championship game, but I now look back and kind of think maybe I was just, you know, really buying into that moment. You know, it's what we did with Frank Clark for years. Frank Clark didn't show up in the regular season, and then he was fantastic in the postseason. And you talk about he earned all of that money. Well, when you pay that much money, you expect more than just postseason performances. I know it's what matters here in Kansas City, but MVS has not lived up to that contract. You brought back Mecole Hardman to return punts and be a gadget player. Mecole Hardman, and he said it point blank, lost you that game yesterday. I know a lot of guys contributed to that loss. The game flipped in that moment. The Chiefs had a chance to go drive down and take the lead, whether you were believing in that offense or you weren't. The circumstance of that moment swung completely back in favor of Denver. Denver won the game in that moment. And when you go out there and acquire somebody to boost your special teams, to return punts, you cannot have that happen. What I would say is you need somebody back there who will just catch the damn football. I don't care about trying to return the ball 15, 20 yards. Just catch the freaking football. You know who can go back there and do that and stand there and fair catch it all the live long day? Justin Watson could do that. Montrell Washington could do that. I don't need you trying to do everything extra. And then, you know what happened? And Mecole Hardman's in what, year 4 or 5 of his NFL career? He then tries to make up for that blatant error, catches the next punt, and runs backwards 12 yards. That's the guy you went to try and boost your special teams. And you know what? He took ownership. He said, that's my bad. Well, I hate to say it, but yeah, And it is your bad. You don't need to let everybody know it was your bad. You're back there to return punts. You're back there to catch the football. You're back there to give the ball back to your Hall of Fame quarterback, who, no, was not good by any means yesterday. And there is just a lot of trust issues, I think. But not just to harp on the wide receiver core. We need to take time to discuss this offensive line. And this is, once again, to continue to put a little bit more heat on Brett Veach. Brett Veach let Orlando Brown Jr. walk, who I don't think has been spectacular in Cincinnati, but you wanted to replace him? You went after Juwan Taylor. And to replace Orlando Brown Jr. at left tackle, you brought in Donovan Smith. Both of those guys have not been good. And Patrick Mahomes is struggling between trusting his wide receivers and trusting that his offensive line can hold up long enough to get those receivers open. I mean, you're 6-2. You have the number one seed, or at least tied for the number one seed in the AFC, and you're favored by 2 against Miami and Germany. And I do expect the Chiefs to bounce back, just like they bounced back against the Jaguars after losing to Detroit. You're 6-2. The sky's not falling. But there are issues you need to look yourself in the mirror and discover. I mean, the trade deadline is tomorrow. If you are really serious about fixing these problems and not just banking on your Hall of Fame quarterback and Hall of Fame coach to pull you out of it, you got to go make some noise. You just do. You have to own up that this offseason, free agency and trade-wise, has been a disaster. An unmitigated disaster. I mean, Donovan Smith was beaten like a drum yesterday. Juwan Taylor, beaten like a drum. Kadarius Toney had one play he was involved in, and it was a handoff that got stuffed for a loss of 4. Sky Moore dropped a pass that I would say a couple of sideline reporters could have run down the field and caught. I mean, beautifully placed. You got to catch the football. You know, and it sounds harsh, but it is a business of what have you done for me lately? And in big-time moments like that, when your quarterback can bail you out time and time again, you have to bail him out. Patrick Mahomes was not good yesterday. But really, was anybody? I mean, you could just compile it all into one and just start handing out cards that have you were the problem. You could just take a giant bowl and hand it out to every single player on this team yesterday, and coaching staff, I might add. Because I think Andy Reid put his players in a spot to fail yesterday. And what I'm getting at here, and like I said time and time throughout this segment, it's not doom and gloom right now. This team's still good. This defense is really good, maybe the best Patrick Mahomes has ever had. And this team's going to be just fine. I still think they're going to go and beat Miami. You're 7-2 going into the bye week. You welcome Philly after that. I think they're going to be fine. But I think we also discussed this in the Detroit game, that you have to be a little bit more critical than what we're used to. I mean, just because you win a lot, just because you've won Super Bowls, doesn't mean that everybody should be, you know, protected from criticism. It's all right to get a little upset and a little frustrated and go, I don't understand this one bit. You know, Brett Veach rebuilt the offensive line, and it was great the last couple of years. He did a bad job this year. The Chiefs have had wide receiver talent before, and he hit on Rashee Rice, apparently. I mean, there's a chance that Rashee Rice could be your number one wide receiver a few years down the road, but the rest of the talent out there is not enough. It's just not. He drafted Isaiah Pacheco, picked up Jerick McKinnon, great pickups. He also drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I think every GM has his blunders, has its faults, but this year really has shown that there just wasn't enough done. And I think you can go into this trade deadline and maybe try to do just a little bit more. Try to move the needle, if you will. And like I said, more good than bad with Brett Veach. But sometimes the bad, it can explain losses like yesterday. Now for Andy Reid, We know Andy Reid is a Hall of Fame head coach. He's got his two Super Bowl rings. He is going to go down as one of the most winning head coaches of all time. Nobody can take that away. Nobody can deny that. And as mad as you can get about it, he's a good football coach. What he struggles with, I think, is being aggressive when you've got talent like this. I know I harped on the wide receiver room, but you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. Why are you running swing passes on 3rd and 2, 4th and 1? Why are you kicking the football down by 7 when it's 4th and 2? And you'd already have the Broncos offense pinned up against their own 5-yard line. Why are you kicking it there? Field goals don't beat the Chiefs, and the Chiefs right now, the way the offense is looking, they can't beat other teams with field goals. It's just a little bit cowardly, in my opinion. Got to be aggressive in moments like that. The Chiefs, I think, were down, 5? And they punted from Denver's, 40-yard line. And the Chiefs did not get the ball back for, 9-10 minutes, it felt like. Turnovers, a huge problem. MVS fumbled. Mahomes had a bad pick and then one in desperation. I don't need to hear about the PI on MVS. The Chiefs put themselves in that spot. It was a bad game all the way around. But as I'm going to continue to say, they're going to be fine. They're still a good football team. But there's issues that have remained consistent since week one. And if you are going to win the Super Bowl, they have to solve. They have to be solved. If you really think this wide receiver group is going to get a lot better, they have to show it soon. They got to show it this week, in fact, because the deadline will be passed at that point. You know, I do want to say, though, divisional games, on the road, cold weather, they could happen. They happen to good teams out there. I think the best teams in this division, in the conference, they've all had bad losses this year. Kansas City's had a bad loss. Cincinnati's had a bad loss. Buffalo has. Baltimore has. Jacksonville has. All the division leaders have had bad losses. That's just the way it goes in the NFL. You know, Miami, who they'll see on Sunday, maybe haven't had a bad loss, but when they've been tested, they've been pounded. They've been smoked. They got smoked by Buffalo, and they got smoked by Philadelphia. You could say those are bad losses. I really do believe that down the road, just like it was back in week one, it's a distant memory. Now, you weren't going to beat the Broncos 50 consecutive times in the road. Eventually, they were going to get you. And they've looked much better over the last 3 weeks with that defense. The offense is just doing enough. The Chiefs couldn't stop the run. And Russell Wilson made big plays when they needed to be made. It was kind of the Russell Wilson from Seattle. I thought Sean Payton, coached that game very well. You tip your cap. But there's flaws of this team that have to be solved. They're 6-2. They're fine. They can be much better. This wide receiver group has to get a lot better. I'm not going to be mad at the defense. I thought they did their job yesterday. Dealing with short field a lot of the times. Got after Russell Wilson, sacked him, 5 times, forced a couple of turnovers, blocked a kick. I know it's special teams, but defense did their job. Offense shot themselves in the foot over and over and over again. Those are issues that have to be cleaned up. But the Chiefs lose 24-9 to the Denver Broncos. Their 6-game winning streak has been snapped, and their 16-game winning streak dating back to 2015 officially snapped after the Broncos winning Mile High and pushing the Chiefs to 6-2 on the season. Up next, they'll get the Miami Dolphins in Germany on Sunday, kickoff at 8:30 a.m. All right, Marco, my voice is about to give out, so I'm going to turn it over to you. Your takeaways, I'm sure it's going to be majority negative, but if you kind of want to take the, let's take a breath, deep breath here, let's play therapist a little bit. If you want to take that approach, I won't stop you. If you want to harp on players, harp on coaches like I did a little bit, I will give you the floor now. But your takeaways in the 15-point loss to the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, I guess positive spin on it. The Chiefs have shown us in the past, They haven't won the Super Bowl with an undefeated season. They haven't won the Super Bowl with a two-loss season. There's going to be games like this, and unfortunately, if you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan, you know this, because it seems like the Chiefs, the bad years and the good years, they always seem to drop a game or two that is a head-scratcher against a team that they are overwhelmingly better than, and that just happened yesterday in Denver. I mean, went into the game already with questions if Patrick Mahomes was going to be a quarterback, going to be the quarterback in this game. And to me, I think maybe when the team is hit with some type of adversity or something that affects the game plan 24 hours before kickoff, I think that could be an element to some of these Chiefs losses, and you could say it was part of the one yesterday. And of course, the other loss this season against Detroit went Travis Kelce not being a part of that as well. So to me, thankfully, we have seen how the Chiefs responded after a loss like this, and it's been pretty they've been pretty successful after it, kind of like Andy Reid after a bye. The Chiefs, after a loss, have done pretty well with getting back on track, and of course they need to do it with the games that are coming up ahead now. Of course, close out with the month of November with Dolphins and Eagles, so they're curious to see how they handle the next two challenges. But I just, right now, you're 6-2. You're still at the top of the AFC conference, AFC West. At the halfway point, you're going to take that if you're a fan of this Chiefs team. So, to me, and you kind of touched on it too, with the streak and just things having to come to an end, and some of that too is being at the top of the AFC and having that home field advantage throughout the playoffs. At some point, Patrick Mahomes is going to have to play a road game in the playoffs. And I'm not taking much away from this loss, because that wasn't the Chiefs at full health, and that wasn't the Chiefs that I think we will see. That's not the Chiefs that we saw over the last 5 weeks. So I'm not too worried after the game against Denver. I'm actually more upset about the streak ending, if anything, because, again, this is a year where it could have continued on again, but to each their own. I guess one of the things I was telling my family friend yesterday was, hey, when this streak started against Denver, what happened that season? Denver recovered and carried Peyton, and their defense carried Peyton Manning to a Super Bowl. So that does show you even your worst loss of the season can't define the whole season. And so that's what I'm just going to take going forward as we enter these last 2 months of the regular season, because you got to pick yourself back up. You're forced to, because you literally take on the team that's neck and neck with you right now at the top of the conference. So, and you have the bye week, and you got a rematch of last year's Super Bowl, and then you have another divisional team in Las Vegas that you go on the road to play in the so-called place Arrowhead West. So to me, if the Chiefs finish out the month 3-0, 2-1, then we're still talking about a team going into December with a chance at retaining that home field advantage. Listen, it was an odd game from the beginning, and it started out on the opening drives. I mean, Chiefs couldn't get anything really going offensively. They punted off. Give Denver the football. Denver goes down and scores on a 10-play, 39-yard drive that, for the Chiefs, was the first time they had given up a touchdown scoring drive to their opponent this season on that team's opening drive. So that right there, weird. Defense, I think we're just starting to see the exhaust and what it's like not having Nick Bolton out there a lot of the time. And maybe Denver, who Bolton got hurt in that game? I think that was the game.
Yeah, that was either – no, it was the Chargers. It was the week after that. So
okay, so he did – so they week, did yep. get to see a Bolton defense. So I can't say that's much to it. But it was just a really weird game. And I don't know. We unfortunately can't have that perspective of what it would have been like to be Mahomes yesterday playing with the flu. But I mean, I'm sitting in the studio of Chiefs Radio, joking with the guys, saying he might be seeing double today. He might.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it just feels like whenever you get the flu, having that, it's just you want to be in bed. You're exhausted. You don't want to be up on your feet working. And this guy's out here playing an NFL game in Denver,
cold temperatures,
altitude. So. Just a lot of things factoring into this loss, and Denver did all the things right. And I think it's a credit to Sean Payton as a coach, too. You came across, you had your first game plan against Chiefs almost worked, and you could have pulled up, and you played him very closely in a Thursday night game in Arrowhead. You regroup, you get a week to prepare for them again, and I just think what Sean Payton had seen that first game against them and what they brought out again, this time against the Chiefs might have been a factor also. So I think coaching was part of that too for Denver. And so to me, they weren't playing a healthy Chiefs defense out there. And I just think that matters a lot, especially in the linebacker core when you are missing Nick Bolton. Drew Tranquil, maybe last week, you could credit that part of him being on the Chargers the previous year to maybe why they were doing some things right defensively last game. But yesterday, they couldn't stop the run game of this. They couldn't stop the rushing attack of the Broncos. They allowed them to have long drives, extended drives. And again, just mistakes by the Chiefs. And Denver made them cost for them, and the Chiefs couldn't do that to them. Couldn't do that to the Broncos. We're talking about those times where Denver had turned the ball over. Chiefs did execute it, got a field goal before the half, and was able to get some points off of that, but blocked field goal, had to give up punt there. You got the turnover on downs, and then the Chiefs come out and punting again also. So just not being able to execute when the opponent gives you the opportunities. So again, I think another big thing is to the defense created opportunities again for the offense to keep them in it and have a chance to win it. So I think if anything, the bright spot was the defense with not 100% healthy, still looked fine, not the best, not good, not great, but just fine against Denver yesterday. And offense and special teams, I mean, they just had a D-minus game at best yesterday.
It was an all-around ugly performance, and, you know, Denver won that game outright. I'm not going to make any excuses for it. And for Chiefs fans going, oh, congratulations, you won your Super Bowl. Stop with all of that. They beat you straight up. Yes, they're going to be excited about it. They're going to celebrate it because it's been a long time coming. But I tip my cap to Sean Payton. I tip my cap to the Broncos. They beat the Chiefs fair and square yesterday. I'm not going to, you know, complain and moan about anything with officials. Chiefs played poorly. Denver played pretty good. I didn't think Denver was exceptional. But defensively, they were great. They overwhelmed Patrick Mahomes, that wide receiver room, the offensive line. But now I expect the Chiefs to bounce back. It's going to be a fun game in Germany. Vegas thinks the Chiefs are going to bounce back. They're a two-point favorite, and I've got no other reason to doubt that or to not believe it because we've seen this Chiefs team bounce back in big ways after losses. I mean, hell, they won six in a row after losing to the Detroit Lions. An ugly game yesterday. I think they're going to be just fine, but now it's going to be a wait-and-see time if the trade deadline moves the needle in the front office. Will the Chiefs go and add to this team? Or are they going to sit back on their hands? Do they think this team is good enough? I'm sure we'll see here in about 24 hours or so. All right, let's take our first break of the show. When we come back, a big weekend in college football for the teams in Kansas. The Jayhawks upended Oklahoma for the first time in 26 years. And Kansas State routed Houston 41-0. We're going to talk about both next on ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. And bear with me, not much of a voice today, but only 24 minutes left to go. And still, a little bit of college sports to dive into. And what a weekend it was
for Kansas Jayhawk fans and Kansas State Wildcat fans. And I think you know how we're going to break down both of these games. I'll start it off with K-State and Houston. And this was a game it just felt like it was absolutely seen in the future. This game, to me, never felt like it was going to be close. Because I wasn't that high on Houston, and the way Kansas State's defense had been playing, how this dual quarterback system was looking, I had no reason to believe that K-State was going to overlook Houston before taking on Texas, which comes this coming weekend. I had no reason to believe that this Kansas State team would slip up. And you look at the numbers, I mean, absolutely phenomenal from Will Howard. Quarterback rating of 208.1. Avery Johnson wasn't asked to throw the ball too much. And I would say that overall, you know, Will Howard stole the show. Avery Johnson didn't even have a yard of rushing, and negative five rushing yards on the game. But I think it was just Will Howard's game. He had the hot hand. Wasn't exceptional running the football. That much more was in DJ Giddens' area of expertise for this game. He was running the ball over 7.4 yards per carry, had two touchdowns in the game on only 13 rushes. But Will Howard, he didn't need to be incredible. He just completed what he needed to complete at a completion percentage north of 88%. Avery Johnson only had one incompletion, and over the game, just three total between the two quarterbacks, going 20 of 23 and over 200 yards and three touchdowns, no picks. Just shredded Houston's defense, and a Houston defense I didn't think that was that good, but you did enough on the ground, ran for almost 180 through the air, 215, but the story of the game was this defense, man. I mean, Houston could not convert a single third down, it felt like. They were 3 of 14 on the game compared to Kansas State's 10 of 14. On fourth down, Houston was 0 of 4, only 208 total yards, 95 through the air. They turned it over twice. Kansas State didn't. They had six penalties for 60 yards. K-State only one for five. Nearly a flawless game. It felt a lot like last year's win against Oklahoma State when they just took him to the woodshed. It wasn't even close. And that's what I wanted to see from this Kansas State team following their loss to Oklahoma State. I mean, they really bounced back against Texas Tech, dismantled TCU and Houston in back-to-back weeks. They did what they were supposed to do. If the hope, the expectation, is still to get back to a Big 12 championship game, they're going to have to go through Texas on the road and Kansas on the road. And, of course, now after seeing what Kansas did to Oklahoma to remain undefeated in Lawrence this year, it's going to be much tougher than in previous years. But you want to talk about gaining some confidence going into the biggest game left on your schedule, at least one could make that argument, against a top 10 team and the Texas Longhorns. You needed to have performances like this to know that there wasn't going to be much slip-up when going down to Austin to take on Texas, which will happen at 11 a.m. this coming Saturday. Now, Texas is going to be without Quinn Ewers. Not going to have Quinn Ewers for this game, but what you can expect from a guy like Malik Murphy is a little bit of a pocket presence, if you will. It sounds weird to say, but he is somebody with his frame, 6'5", 240, that he's going to want to stay in there and sling the ball all over the yard. He was 16 of 25 for 170 and two touchdowns and a pick against BYU. He wants to sit in there and throw the football. But just because Quinn Ewers is not going to be a quarterback doesn't mean it's going to be, a walk in the park. And K-State knows that. They're going to have to worry about the running game of Texas. And Jonathan Brooks, I think Kansas fans know plenty about Jonathan Brooks. He's been unstoppable this year. He's averaging over 115 yards on the ground per game and seven touchdowns, 6.4 yards per carries. In the receiving game, I mean, of course, Xavier Worthy is somebody you're going to have to worry about, but also Adonai Mitchell, a transfer player, and they also have another kid by the name of Jatavian Sanders. I mean, they've got five guys in their receiving core with over 200 yards receiving. One of those guys, of course, being Brooks. So a little bit of a hybrid there, if you want to call him a hybrid. So good coming out of the backfield as a running back. So many weapons for Texas. But for K-State's defense to do that against Big 12 opponents, I mean,
that's getting the confidence you need. They haven't allowed a touchdown since mid-October. And I think that Oklahoma State loss doesn't look that bad anymore. The loss to Missouri has never looked bad, but Oklahoma State, now top half of the Big 12, big showdown coming in Bedlam this upcoming weekend. But K-State, three straight wins, and have won by three scores or more in all three of those games to set up a monumental showdown with the Texas Longhorns this coming Saturday. Will Howard could have sat there and pouted after Chris Klieman started putting Avery Johnson out there more. He could have sat there and closed up shop and said, nope, you can give him the job. I'm not playing. He could have done that last year of college football, and he has to share playing time with a true freshman who's going to be there for years to come. Some kids would have taken that the wrong way. Some kids would have sat out and gone and transferred. That's just the way of college sports now. But he was rewarded, and he's been rewarded these last couple weeks. I think he's looked much better. This system appears to work really well, and I can't wait to see how it works against the Longhorns this coming weekend. But the Cats get it done 41-0 over the Houston Cougars. They now move to 6-2 on the season, only one loss in conference play. Now, speaking of that Texas and Kansas State game, the Longhorns only a 4-point favorite. Should be quite the barn burner on Fox. I'd imagine Big Noon is there. I think I did hear on the Border Patrol today when Lebo and Steven were talking that Big Noon is expected to be there. So going from Lawrence to watch KU in Oklahoma to going to Austin to see Texas and Kansas State. Can't wait. Should be a phenomenal slate of games all weekend long in the Big 12. You'll have the Bedlam matchup, Kansas State, Texas, KU and Iowa State. Really a battle of a lot of the top half teams in the Big 12. But speaking of the other Kansas school, the Jayhawks got it done against the Oklahoma Sooners, the undefeated Oklahoma Sooners, 38-33. And what's even more incredible about this game, about this performance, Jason Benetti was on the call for Fox in that game. He is the broadcaster for the White Sox and does a fantastic job doing football games. He called it a generational win. And I think that's absolutely true, because for how many recruits were on hand, you had to sit through a rain delay. It was freezing. Oh, Jalen Daniels didn't play. And is Jason Bean probably having, and this is, I can't believe I'm saying this on air, probably had his worst performance of the season when given a full week of practice. The reason I say that is because against Texas, he was told 30 minutes before kickoff he was starting, and that really was his worst game of the year. He did not play well in this game. He had some big-time throws and big-time moments, but overall, Jason Bean was not great. And what's funny is when we talk about Kansas against top 25 opponents, the answer is always the same. They have to play perfect. They can't have turnovers. They can't have blunders. They can't afford the running game to not get going. They can't afford bad quarterback play. They just can't. But they did win this game. They won this game despite a surge from Oklahoma in the second quarter, in which they scored 21 points. I didn't think they were all that special on third down, 4-14 in this game. They certainly weren't special throwing the ball through the air, and they had three turnovers in this game, and critical turnovers. Jason Bean was picked off twice in the fourth quarter, and there was a special teams blunder. Trevor Wilson, who's been fantastic, fumbles the ball on a kickoff return after Oklahoma just tied the game. No, Kansas was not perfect. They weren't. The defense, which plays much better at home, I thought really, really good. I throw away the fact that Oklahoma scored 33 points. They held Dylan Gabriel to 14-19 through the air, only 171 yards, an interception, no touchdowns in this game. Yes, the running game did get going with Tawee Walker, who had 146 on the ground, but receiving-wise, Drake Stoops led them in receiving with 76 yards. That is usually a very explosive Oklahoma offense. And think about this with the secondary of Kansas. Drake Stoops had four catches. The next leading receiver was Jaleel Farouk, who had three catches for 11 yards. In terms of how many catches he had, there was a couple of guys that had one catch for a lot of yards. Brennan Thompson had one for 39. Also, Nick Anderson had one for 18. But
He had two guys. Only three catches for 11 yards. This KU secondary really, really stepped up. And as for the Jayhawks, I mean, they get 112 on the ground from Devin Neal. They get 51 yards on 12 carries from Hyshawn, two touchdowns. The receiving core, very well balanced. 3 for 79 for Lawrence Arnold, 3 for 62 for Mason Fairchild, 2 for 32 for Quentin Skinner, 2 for 19 for Luke Grimm. I mean, these guys clearly were comfortable catching balls all afternoon long from Jason Bean. And how monumental was this win? I mean, I can't recall a bigger win in the last 15 years for Kansas. This probably rivals the win against Virginia Tech in the Orange Bowl because of what Kansas fans had to endure, had to sit through to wait for something like this to happen. I mean, there were close calls with Oklahoma, but it just, you just knew deep down it was never going to happen. And for this to be the last meeting between the two teams for quite some time, at least regular season wise, what a way to go out. And now you're 6-2 and still what felt like an impossibility 2 weeks ago, you're still in the hunt for a Big 12 title. And you're bowl eligible in back-to-back years for only the second time in program history. What Lance Leipold has done in just 3 years at Kansas is nothing short of remarkable. I mean, I know here in the state of Kansas, you're always going to look at Bill Snyder and how quickly he turned around a program that was dead in the water. But in modern day, I don't know if anybody thought Kansas was going to be fixed. I think a lot of people out there, with how many coaches failed, I mean, they tried the up-and-coming route with Turner Gill. They tried to hire a big-name coach like Charlie Weiss. They hired another big-name coach like Les Miles. None of them even came close to building a competitive team. David Beatty had ties to Kansas for being a wide receiver coach on the Orange Bowl team. The good years of Kansas football. I mean, the Mark Mangino's reputation had been tarnished. I mean, a lot of people, I think, believe that this program is dead and gone, man. It's never coming back. They get 10,000 people in the stands. I mean, nothing was exciting about Kansas football. And I was there on Saturday, and truly an unbelievable experience to have Big Noon there. Jason Bean, who gets maybe more criticism than anybody for this. I mean, he would have been the GOAT and not the good kind if Kansas lost that game. Everybody would have been coming down on Jason Bean saying if Jalen Daniels out there, they win that football game. Well, it didn't matter. Now, Jalen Daniels got another week of rest. And if that's the last game that Jason Bean starts, man, he deserves his flowers. Because even as bad as he played throwing the ball through the air, 15 to 32, two interceptions, he came up big. He had the biggest throw of any Kansas quarterback in the Lance Leipold era. That 4th and 6 of the game on the line hit Lawrence Arnold down the field. That won them the game. And what's so poetic about it is that you recall last year, the game on the line against TCU, kind of similar spot on the field. Jason Bean dropped back to throw, stayed poised in the pocket, fired it down the field to who? Lawrence Arnold. And there was that controversial no call on the PI, and Kansas lost that game. Kind of feels poetic. Basically the same moment, kind of the same score, and hits Lawrence Arnold this time. Kansas goes down to score, take the lead. And the defense, nope, forced an incompletion on the final play of the game. To sit here at 6-2, you know, now you're going to be going to Ames, who's, you know, an Iowa State team is awaiting you, top half of the Big 12. It's a gauntlet of a schedule. And what's so impressive about this Kansas team, they have played such a tough schedule this year. They didn't get Houston. They didn't get TCU. They still get Cincinnati and Texas Tech. But to have to play Texas on the road and Oklahoma State on the road and Oklahoma and Iowa State on the road and K-State at home, that is a tough schedule. And there was a reason a lot of people were betting the under for win totals for Kansas. It was just no way they were going to do it back-to-back years. Well, now the expectation
is getting to 9 wins, maybe 10 if you win out here. And you get to 10, you're in the hunt for a Big 12 championship, depending on what happens to Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, and Iowa State. It is just a chaotic mess at the top half of the Big 12. Oklahoma's still in first. They are 7-1, 4-1 overall. Texas, 7-1, 4-1 overall. K-State, 6-2, 4-1 overall. In the conference, or conference record, excuse me, Oklahoma State, 4-1 in conference, 6-2 overall. Iowa State, 4-1 in conference, 5-3 overall. And Kansas is 3-2, 6-2 overall. Undefeated at home. The only teams in the Big 12 that are undefeated at home this year, Oklahoma, Kansas State. You can call Texas. They count on Yahoo Sports as a home loss to Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl, but not really a true home loss. So I'll throw Texas in this mix. OU's undefeated at home. Texas undefeated at home. K-State undefeated at home. And Kansas and BYU, the only teams in the conference that are undefeated on their home turf this year. Really impressive. Fun game for Kansas as they win 38-33 over the 6th-ranked Oklahoma Sooners. They move up to 22nd in the country in the top 25, the AP top 25, and they will take on the Iowa State Cyclones in Ames this coming Saturday. We'll see who the quarterback will be for that game. All right, Marker, we'll take a quick break, maybe a one-minute break here, come back and just recap what happened in Champaign last night. KU basketball had an exhibition game, a charity game, against a top 25 opponent in Illinois. It did not go in their favor. But let's pump the brakes because exhibition games really don't matter. We'll talk about that to wrap up the show on ESPN Kansas City. We are wrapping up the shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. And we've almost made it. At least for me, that's a little bit of a relief because I've got no voice today. But hopefully you've enjoyed the show for the most part. It can always be tough. Trying to get through shows like this, but appreciate Marco contributing there on the board as we talked Chiefs Broncos, we talked K-State Houston, KU Oklahoma, and to wrap up the show, just want to touch on real quickly what happened in a charity exhibition game between Kansas and Illinois. The Fighting Illini got the best of the number one ranked Kansas Jayhawks, 82-75. What is cool about this? Number one, of course, you can raise this much money. I mean, every team, it felt like across the nation, were doing games like this. And I really believe it's the future of college basketball. And I think it's great. What I would actually do if it, you know, still found a way to benefit, you know, teams here in Kansas, Emporia State, Fort Hays State, Washburn. Like, these games are so much fun. The crowd's into it. It's a big crowd. They're games that can really benefit you going into the season. Like, for years, you know, KU will play Washburn and Emporia State, win by 50. It's a great experience for Emporia State, right? Because you get some money to come up and play Kansas. You play down Fieldhouse. Great competition. But I think for Kansas, it's more so of a tune-up game, if anything. It's not as exhilarating. Last night was fun to watch. Usually don't get those games until, you know, mid to late December. No, for Kansas, the Champions Classic, of course. But even though Kansas lost this game, I'm not overreacting at all. This was actually, I think, the perfect outcome for Kansas. There were two perfect outcomes for Kansas. Either lose the game or they win 100-56 against the top 25 team. There's really only two good outcomes. The reason is this gives Bill Self and his staff a reason to get on his players. Going, you want to be the number one team in the nation? You think you're so good? Well, clearly not. And we've seen this all the time with Bill Self and Kansas. You lose a game like this, we see Kansas. They'll lose a game like this at some point in the season. It'll be to Oklahoma State, or it'll be to Iowa State, or it'll be to Oklahoma. Somebody on the road. That just is not a bad. Illinois is going to be a top six seed in the NCAA tournament. And you got that, you know, test early on. The game doesn't count. So you're not dropping in the rankings or anything. But Arkansas played Purdue. Purdue had to go to Fayetteville, a matchup you've never seen. Arkansas won. It's great competition, and it's a great test for the top teams out there. You want to see more of this moving forward, and I believe we will. Even if it's not for, you know, tragedy, raising money for tragedy and what happened over in Maui, but just to do this moving forward in college basketball, you can raise money for charity, you know, across the world. Let's play in this game to raise money. You know, to sell out stadiums and have great competition. Because if you watch that game last night and you don't believe You know, that made Kansas a lot better, Illinois a lot better. I don't know what to tell you, man. I mean, that was a competitive game. Illinois pulled away late. It was a 3-point game, 5-point game with 2 minutes to go. It's a good test. They're on the road. KU's going to have to go on the road plenty of times this year, where it's a tough environment. They get Indiana in the non-conference slate. They'll have the Champions Classic in a couple of weeks. And now they'll take on Fort Hays State this Wednesday. You tune up some things that you did wrong in the Illinois game. But I just thought it was hilarious last night to be, you know, scrolling on Twitter and seeing fans go, well, this team is soft, this team's terrible, they don't deserve the number one ranking. I'm going, no, really, this is the best outcome for a Kansas coach team. Because usually what happens is Kansas will, you know, dominate in their first game at home, maybe their second game at home. They'll go to the Champions Classic. They'll either lose that game, and then that kind of becomes what this exhibition game was last night, your, you know, wake-up call, if you will. Not to lose to a, you know, losing to Kentucky, Duke, or Michigan State is not a bad loss, but it's like your wake-up call. Bill Self would be upset, and then they go rattle off 5, 6, 7 in a row. It was fun to see college basketball night. You said this, Mark, right? The sports equinox. We got so many sports going on now. College football, NFL, college basketball, NBA, World Series still going on. NHL is on. It's never ending. High school sports, if you're into that, just really a fun time if you are a big-time sports fan, which, of course, we all are here at ESPN Kansas City. Well, there is Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City.